Lima Zandrin and her fellow refugees arrived on Sabaddon, determined to cast off the hierarchy they had left behind. 15 years later, hiding was no longer sufficient. Zandret wanted revenge on the people who had stolen her daughter, so she sought out Mandalore to help her. She approached him because my culture eschews the Force. That, after all, was where all this started, with militarized religious cults turning children into monsters.
Ula didn't dare look at the young Sith's face. He didn't know exactly how the Sith trained their acolytes, but this sounded plausible. He wondered if his Jedi masters had a similar system.
2.
Stryver's count continued.
During her self-imposed exile, Zandrit and her fellow artisans advanced robotics in directions no one has ever seen before. Finding inspiration in materials in human biology itself, they sought to make droids that would neither age nor grow inflexible and hidebound, so their small colony could last forever. The technical challenges were immense, of course, but they made some progress in unexpected directions. The droids you've seen are advanced prototypes called fast breeders. Given enough metal and raw energy, they grow from seeds into fully formed combat versions in a matter of days. The nest on Hutta could have produced dozens of such killers if left undisturbed, and the same is true of the nests on Sabaddon. The hotspots you've been observing from above, the ones that look like cities, are in fact droid-building factories. They are churning out fast breeders by the thousand now that the planet defenses have been tripped. And not just fast breeders, new factories as well. That is where the true threat lies. This was the weapon she intended to use against the Empire. 3. If left unchecked, Zandrit's breeder technology will inevitably outgrow its homeworld and spill out into the galaxy. The math of geometric progression is undeniable. One world this year, two worlds the next, then 4, then 8. Within a decade, it's 250 worlds. Then another decade later, it's 250,000. One human generation is all they would need to take over the entire galaxy, along with Sith, Jedi, and Mandalorians alike. 4. Negotiation is no longer an option. Zandrit put all her prejudices into her droids. You've heard their voices. You know what drives them. The only solution is to crush Sabaddon completely. We must be ruthless, decisive, and thorough in order to ensure that Lima Zandrit's legacy is completely eradicated. Just one nest would be enough to allow all this to start over again.
Stryver had run out of fingers on his right hand.
Are you finished? Asked the Sith.
I will be if this threat isn't neutralized.
Stryver's fists descended to take his weight, knuckle first, on the side of the holoprojector. The sphere of Sabaddon turned unstoppably between them. Glowing red lights appeared and spread like a plague in fast motion. Soon the whole planet was red, and streams of tiny malignant dots began to leap off the surface and escape into unseen spaces.
You said we.
Satil Shan's voice made Ula jump.
We must be ruthless. I presume that was deliberate.
It was. Everything I have seen on Hutta and Sabaddon confirms my worst fears. Sabaddon is responding to the threat you all represent by ramping up production. It must be stopped before the contagion spreads. Since neither Empire nor Republic can single-handedly destroy this menace with the resources available right now, you must work together to see it done.
With you in charge, I suppose, said Lorin.
The end justifies the means.
I will never take orders from a Mandalorian, said the Sith in mocking tones. And I will never fight alongside a Jedi. You are insane even to suggest it.
There must be an alternative, Master Satil said. Another attempt at negotiation, perhaps.
The planetary defense system is automated. The only voices coming from the planet originate with the fast breeders. That's how I know that Lima Zandrit is dead. Everyone down there is dead. It's just the droids now, and you can't negotiate with them.
Well, we can't trust one another, said Shigar. That's some choice you've given us.
Could I make it any other way, I would. Believe me.
Jedi and Sith glowered at one another over the hologram, and suddenly Ula knew exactly what he had to do. Once again, Jet had been absolutely right. Ula could see both sides at once and save himself into the bargain.
Are you the leader of the Imperial fleet?
He asked the young Sith. He already knew the answer. The Emperor would never trust such wealth to someone so young, no matter how powerful she might be. But he had to ask for appearance's sake.
No,
she admitted.
Whoever that person is, then, I want to speak to them face to face,
he said.
I believe I can bring the Empire to the table.
You? My master would gut a worm like you just to watch you die.
Ula's stomach roiled. Her master. He had hoped for a non-Sith commander, but would have to settle for what he got.
Take me to your command vessel and let me try. If I fail, by the sound of things, I might as well be dead.
Your death is closer than you think. He's in the shuttle.
Well then, all the better. It'll be over quickly.
Envoy V.E., said Satil Shan, be very careful. You must be absolutely sure of yourself.
I am.
He straightened and puffed out his chest.
If the Empire agrees to Stryver's suggestion, will you?
The Grand Master showed no sign of uncertainty.
Of course. We're not at war, after all, and the threat is severe.
Good.
Ula turned back to the Sith girl. She was tight-lipped with rage, as though she couldn't believe his audacity.
This isn't a trick. I'll go with you now if you'll take me. Please.
Just you,
she finally said.
No one else.
That's out of the question, said Lorin.
No,
he said, although his heart warmed at her concern.
I'm happy to go on my own. If I can't convince them with words, what difference would a rifle or two make?
She reluctantly backed down.
Just be careful. We want you back in one piece. Not several,
said the Sith. She was grinning now, perhaps anticipating the sport her master would have with him.
I refuse to guarantee anything.
Ula wondered if he looked as faint as he felt. What if she killed him the moment they were on the other side of the airlock, before he had a chance to speak? That would be the most awful irony of all.
I'm ready,
he said in as strong a voice as he could muster.
Let's not keep your master waiting.
Indeed, she said. Let's not.
If we don't hear from you within 30 minutes, we'll assume you're dead.
Ula walked around the holoprojector and let the Imperial guards take him by the shoulders and frog march him to the door. There was no turning back now. The eyes of his erstwhile allies in the Republic followed him as he was led off to betray them all. The moment the airlock closed behind them, the puny envoy started to struggle. Axe strode on, her mind full of ways to lessen the inevitable consequences of her failure. She didn't know what Darth Kratos had expected, but he was sure to turn this unexpected result against her. That she was finding it hard to think wasn't helping.
Listen to me,
the envoy called after her.
You have to listen to me.
She didn't slow down. She barely even heard him.
Lima Zandrit is dead, Stryver had said. Everyone down there is dead.
She didn't know why that pronouncement had made a difference, but it seemed to. Her family, her mother, what had happened to her father? She had never asked. Maybe he was dead too, had died years ago when she was a child. Maybe he was a Sith Lord who wouldn't lower himself to be associated with a common woman. Maybe, she thought. Just maybe. Impossible. She mocked herself for even thinking it. Darth Kratos was no kind of father to her, and never would be. She needed no father, just like she needed no family. If Stryver was right, and the fugitives were all dead, that just made her life easier. She wouldn't have to expend the energy finding and killing them in the Emperor's name.
Please! I'm trying to tell you that I'm not who you think I am! We're on the same side, and have been all the time!
The squawking of the envoy finally penetrated her consciousness. On the brink of entering the shuttle, she stopped and reached out one half-gripped hand. He swept out of the guard's hands and smashed into the airlock wall.
Don't even think of lying to me, she said.
I'm not!
The envoy was pale as marble, and his voice little more than a whisper, but he didn't flinch as she approached.
I'm an Imperial agent!
She activated her lightsaber and held it across his throat.
You don't look like a cipher agent. You're not even fully human.
Her contempt was ferocious.
All right. Not an agent per se, but an informer at least. And I am loyal, regardless what species I am. Utterly loyal. I swear it.
Axe didn't move. She knew that many highly ranked Republic officers sometimes preferred non-human staff, and the belief that this would protect them from surveillance. If this envoy had been turned, he would be highly prized by the Minister of Information.
I tried to board your shuttle on Hutta,
he pressed on, beginning to stammer now.
But the guards turned me away!
That much was true, and it made her hesitate. Axe couldn't believe she was listening to him, and more, actually considering his story. But his brazenness and bravery in the face of certain death were persuasive. She had to admire his guts, even if she would see them sizzling, if she found out that he was trying to trick her. It wasn't impossible that he was a double agent placed by Satil Shan to lead her and her master astray. Axe smiled with her teeth. Darth Kratos would know. If the envoy was telling the truth, it would be a boon for her. If not, her master would have someone else upon which to act out his displeasure.
What species are you?
She asked him.
Epiganthix!
Never heard of it.
We come from Panatha, in the Pecanth Reach.
I don't care. If you ever want to see your home again, if you ever want to see anything again, then you'll tell my master everything you just told me, and convince him that it's true.
Who is your master?
Darth Kratos. Does that name mean anything to you?
If anything, the envoy went even paler.
Good. Then you appreciate the gravity of your situation.
She deactivated her lightsaber and let him drop. The guards picked him up and dragged him after her into the shuttle where her master waited. Darth Kratos awaited her in the shuttle's spacious but inhospitable passenger cabin, wearing a bulky armored suit. Only his face was visible, pinched and puckered into a permanent scowl. He leaned heavily on his lightsaber staff. When he saw the envoy, his brow came down even farther.
Explain.
Axe did so, starting at Douse Driver's dire predictions and moving quickly on to the possibility of cooperation. The prisoner remained silent throughout, struck dumb by Darth Kratos's forbidding mien. That was a good thing. Had he interrupted at any point, he might have been killed out of hand.
And Satil Shan has been taken in by this Mandalorian's machinations.
Her master's eyebrows, as thin as old scars, rose up toward his time-worn scalp.
It appears so, she said. She sent her envoy to negotiate on her behalf.
Now Darth Kratos' stare descended fully upon him, and the envoy quailed.
Speak. My name is Ulavi'i,
he stammered.
I report directly to Watcher 3 in the Operations Division of the Ministry of Intelligence. I am your servant, my lord, a loyal agent of the Empire. A spy? How unfortunate for the Grand Master.
Darth Kratos' face broke into a broad, cracked smile.
Tell me, spy, how you propose to betray her. Republic and Empire share the same initial objectives,
the envoy said,
pulling free from the two guards. He had clearly been thinking hard while waiting his turn to speak.
The smashing of Sabaton's orbital defense system comes ahead of any invasion or mass bombardment, the purpose of which would be the neutralization of the planet's central authority, since it must have one, human or artificial. And together, I agree that we can probably achieve that. But once we have the planet toothless and brainless, the need for an alliance will be gone. I suggest we turn on the Jedi and douse Striver then. Break the so-called alliance and take what's rightfully ours. Sabaton will be the Emperor's at last. I'll supply misinformation at every opportunity, ensuring that the Grand Master does not ever find the chance to do the same to you.
What do you ask for in return?
The envoy looked surprised by the question.
Me? Nothing, my lord. I'm simply doing my duty.
There must be something important to you, beyond your duty. Ask, and it shall be yours.
Well, there is one that I would ask you to spare, after your inevitable victory.
Tell me who.
She was no one, lower even than a trooper. Her name is Lorin Moxler.
Do you know this woman, Axe?
Darth Kratos asked.
I believe I do, Master.
Good.
Darth Kratos' smile disappeared. The envoy was wrenched roughly forward and raised into the air. He struggled against the invisible hold on him, but there was no resisting it. Axe had experienced the power of her master's force grip. She knew how tight it could be.
Listen to me, spy.
The envoy frantically nodded, too frightened to speak aloud.
I cannot read you. Your mind is shielded from me by either some unnatural contrivance or a natural talent. I suspect the latter. The Minister of Intelligence seeks out your kind in order to keep his secrets from both his masters and our enemy. So when I look into you, I see no loyalty to the Emperor. I sense only tangled allegiances with no clear outcomes. Given a choice, I would never trust you. Yet you and your kind are a loathsome necessity in times like these. I must find a way to curb your natural instinct for treachery. To that end...
Here, Envoy V.E. jerked violently forward, so he was staring straight into the eyes of Darth Kratos.
To that end, be sure that if you betray me, I will hunt down the fancy of your non-human heart and put her through such torments that you will be grateful when I kill her. And then it will be your turn. Is that clear?
Yes, my lord. Abundantly so.
The envoy dropped with a thud to the floor.
Very good, said Darth Kratos. Axe, get him out of my sight. You will return him to Satil Shan with the agreement he promised her, and you will accompany him as my official mouthpiece.
But, Master...
Be silent! I could hardly let him go alone. They would never believe that I trusted them unless I took such precautions. You will watch the Grand Master, and you will watch this one, too. At the slightest sign of treachery, you will notify me, and my wrath will descend upon both of them.
She bowed her head, thinking,
another dead-end task, and probably a suicide mission, too. I will do as you instruct.
I sense your impatience, Axe. Remember that our rewards will be bountiful when victory is complete. When the Grand Master is dead and this world ours, then your apprenticeship will be over. Not before. Go now and do my bidding.
Yes, Master,
she said, bowing deeply, sure that he sensed the burn of excitement in her mind. To be free of him at last, to be a true Sith, that was all she had ever wanted, and she deserved it. She knew that well. Not for nothing had she slaved this last decade and more, to the detriment of all else. Lima Sandret is dead. Axe suppressed even the barest hint of regret,
as she turned and left the shuttle, dragging the quivering informer behind her. Part 5. Fatal Alliance. Chapter 31.
Did you have to bring her back with you?
Lorin whispered to Ula as she escorted the passengers of the Auriga Fire to the commoner's conference room.
I don't trust her.
The envoy adjusted his collar as though he was feeling too hot.
No choice, I'm afraid. Darth Kratos was insistent.
Well, he didn't offer to put one of us on his command deck.
I suppose he wouldn't offer, given the choice. And I'm afraid I didn't think to ask. I thought the Sith would be valuable as a hostage, that's all.
I suppose she will.
Noticing Ula's discomfort, she forced a smile.
Hey, look, I'm not saying you didn't do your best. I'm just glad you got us this far. No one else could have done it.
She patted him on the shoulder with her prosthetic half-hand.
Thanks, he said, looking embarrassed. I'm glad you think so.
She couldn't help a smile. His social awkwardness was both touching and puzzling. How had anyone so clumsy ever risen so high in the Republic administration, let alone survived an audience with a Dark Lord of the Sith? Perhaps Darth Kratos had taken pity on him. That seemed rather unlikely. The Sith apprentice, Eldon Ax, walked steadily between Master Satil and Shigar, surrounded by an entourage of businesslike soldiers, all holding rifles at the ready. Her wild-haired head was held high, and she took each step as though fighting the urge to spin and fight. She was like a wild animal, held barely in check.
I don't trust her, Lorin repeated. And I'm good at reading people.
Beside her, Ula cleared his throat, but said nothing. The meeting was uncomfortable from the beginning. Captain Pippolides' crest was a deep purple, and her basic difficult to understand, as was often the case with Ankhs, whose voices tended to be so deeply pitched that they bordered on the subsonic. Shigar swore he felt his ribcage rattle on a couple of occasions. The captain first ordered all non-essential personnel out of the room. Lorin was one of those, and Shigar caught the hurt glance she shot him. There was nothing he could do about it, though. He had no power here.
Colonel Gurin had no opportunity to confirm his succession plans to me, said Master Satil. But I know he had the highest regard for you, Captain Pippolidi. He would be glad to know that the fleet is in reliable hands.
May it remain so,
the captain growled, with a sharp look at Eldon Ax. The implication was obvious and twofold. Many in the military harbored hard feelings for the Jedi after the events leading up to the Treaty of Coruscant, when the Order had been deliberately trapped between the Empire and the Mandalorians. The closing of that trap had left the Republic divided over the role Jedi Knights should play in future conflicts. Some even went so far as to mistrust the Order entirely, preferring to leave them out. The fact that Master Satil had brought a Sith to the negotiating table only confirmed those mistrustful feelings.
My enemy is your enemy, said Ax. That makes you useful to me, and vice versa.
Captain Pippolides' crest turned bright orange.
We do not need you, you murderous witch child.
Enough, said Master Satil, raising both hands. This won't get us anywhere. The fact is that we do need her, Captain Pippolidi, and the Imperials as well, so we must negotiate accordingly. Have your analyst confirm Douse Driver's calculations?
Yes.
The captain raised herself up to her full height, making her the tallest person in the room by more than a meter.
I have sent a long-range probe droid to convey a message to the Supreme Commander, but I do not anticipate a response of any kind within a day.
The chance of Stantors sending a fleet on the basis of one message is remote, Master Satil said. And by the time it came, Sabaddon would be boiling over.
Yes.
That single syllable conveyed a weight of import. For all her dislike of the situation, at least the captain understood its significance.
I don't understand why Stryver didn't tell us this earlier, said Shigar. As it stands, we have just 15 ships now. If we'd combined both our fleets on arrival, it would have been over 30, if he'd warned us.
Would you have believed him?
Asked Ula.
No,
said Axe unexpectedly.
I tried to tell my master about the hexes, but he didn't listen.
Shigar didn't add me too, but he could have.
So Stryver let us take a hammering just to make a point? If we'd been beaten, that would have done no one any good.
I'm sure he has his reasons, said Master Satil. The same reason, possibly, that he's the only one of his kind here. If the Mandalore feels so strongly about this, why wouldn't he send more to back us up?
Perhaps he wants us to do his dirty work for him. Or he doesn't think his people are up to it,
the young Sith said. Shigar met her quick gaze. If they shared one thing, it seemed, it was a mistrust of the Mandalorians.
15 ships,
mused Captain Pippoliti.
Including one bulk cruiser.
Axe said,
We have 3,000 frontline troops, divided across the remains of 3 regiments, repulsor lift, heavy weapons, and armored with 200 TRA-9 battle droids. We have shuttles sufficient to land them and support them. But we lost much of our munitions when the ships carrying them were destroyed by the hexes.
Are those figures accurate?
Asked the captain suspiciously.
I have been ordered to withhold nothing. It is to our benefit at the moment not to do so.
In that spirit, I will offer the same. 3,500 troops, 2 full regiments, repulsor lift and armor. Our wings were in the air when their capital ships were destroyed, so most of the fighters themselves survived. Hangar decks are crowded, though, and refueling options limited.
We have the same problem,
said Axe.
Colonel Kalish sent raiding parties to salvage what they could from the infected vessels, but none returned. One came back infected. We destroyed it.
We noticed. Our intelligence staff is working double shifts, watching everything around the planet. Not helped, of course, by the fact that we were short-staffed to begin with.
The captain's tension visibly eased as she and Axe exchanged details of losses and setbacks. Shigar had heard how battle lines could be blurred on a war's bloody front. This was the first time he had seen it in action. Perhaps Stryver's unlikely plan had some merit after all. Ula broke into the rapid exchange of intelligence.
Every minute we stand around chatting, he said, Zandrit's droids build more of themselves, more factories, more who knows what. If we're going to stop them, we have to start making solid plans, and fast.
Agreed, said Master Satil. Our number one priority is stopping the droids from getting more than a toehold in orbit. While their factories are confined to the surface of the planet, it will be possible to defeat them.
A whole planet with just 15 ships? Asked one of the captain's senior officers. And just one bulk cruiser? The hard-skinned major shook his head. No matter how you divide it up, it's impossible.
Only if we tell ourselves it is, said Shigar. Stryver's data clearly showed how the hexes radiated outward from a central point. The main hotspot your ships bombarded,
he added with a nod to Axe.
I think it's safe to assume that this was where Zandrit and the others founded the colony's capital. Destroying it didn't take out the hexes' coordinating intelligence, but must have hurt it enough to move elsewhere. If we look for the place that's growing the fastest, that'll be the place to hit.
We have identified 2 such locations,
said Captain Pippoliti. A hologram flickered to life between them.
Here and here,
she said, indicating one spot at the equator and another at the South Pole.
Perhaps the hexes have decided not to put all their eggs in one basket this time.
Shigar studied the image. The site on the equator was in the middle of a vast sea of lava, dotted with islands of solid stone. The polar site was much more stable. Straight lines radiated from it in all directions, leading to other spots elsewhere.
That's a factory,
he said, pointing at the pole.
Perhaps the master factory, where everything else originates. And that's the brain,
he said, transferring his finger to the equator.
How can you possibly know that?
Asked Axe.
Because factories need physical means to get things in and out. Resources, power, finished droids. That's what these are.
He followed one line from point to point.
Roads or railways of some kind. Or power cables. And brains don't need anything of the sort,
she said, nodding.
It can just sit there, isolated in the middle of that mess, sending orders out by radio.
I think you're right, Shigar.
Master Satil moved around the globe, rubbing her chin.
Teams striking both at once, plus targeted bombardment at the secondary locations, should be enough to slow the Hex's growth.
Enough to stop it, perhaps,
said Captain Pippoliti.
Until reinforcements arrive.
There was an uncomfortable silence. Shigar knew as well as anyone that once the threat of the planet was reduced to zero, the Alliance would break. This moment of solidarity was both fragile and temporary. No one had forgotten that the Sith and the Jedi, the Empire and the Republic, were anything other than mortal enemies.
Let's worry about reinforcements when they get here,
Ula said.
Captain Pippoliti, would you be willing to sketch out a basic plan now, to pass on to Darth Kratos and Colonel Kalish for their opinion? I suggest dividing resources evenly over all tactical objectives, to ensure that both parties feel that they are included but not exploited. Plus double the usual number of commanding officers to each platoon. Discipline must be maintained. We don't want the troops shooting one another at a critical moment.
Naturally not,
said the captain with a bluish cast to her crest. Shigar didn't know what that meant. Irony, perhaps? Shigar caught another glance from the young Sith's direction, bored this time, and again he sympathized. Their duel in the hut's security airlock felt a lifetime ago. His lightsaber hand itched, but he kept it carefully limp at his side. The door to the conference room hissed open. Lorin was taken by surprise. She had long ago given up trying to read the lips of the people inside. On seeing a major, she automatically stood to attention.
Private HT, a moment,
said the sturdy Rilaren.
You too, Moxler.
Lorin followed Hetchke and the Major into the conference room. The air seemed much denser than normal, as was always the case during long planning sessions. A current projection of the planet hung in the center of the room, dashed and dotted with notations in yellow and green. People huddled around it, making suggestions. The Sith girl was one of them. Both Shigar and Ula looked up as Lorin entered, but it was the captain who spoke.
We're sending strike teams to two locations,
she said in a voice so deep it hurt Lorin's breastbone. One long finger stabbed at the globe.
Here and here. We need people familiar with the Hexes to guide each team. Both your names have been mentioned for the assault on the Master Factory. Private Hetchke, your detail was with the envoy under the authority of Supreme Commander Stantors. I don't outrank him, of course, but I can promote you above the rank required for an escort. No one would dream of wasting a lieutenant on such a detail, and we're short of officers. Will you accept this assignment?
Yes, sir,
Hetchke snap saluted, looking like he was equal parts delighted and terrified. This was not only the fastest leap up the chain of command imaginable, but it could also be the briefest.
And what about you, Moxla?
Forgive me, sir, but I have a history.
So I'm told. I don't care what happened back then. You're the closest thing we have to Special Forces now, so I'd be insane not to use you. All that matters is that you'll follow orders and be followed in turn by anyone who has any doubts. Do you think you can manage that?
Her face was burning. In the service again? She didn't know whether to kill Shigar or kiss him.
Yes, sir. I do. I will.
Good. Major Cha, take them to the quartermaster and have them kitted out. I want them briefed and ready for action within the hour.
Yes, sir.
The Ralaran saluted and guided them toward the door. Lorin felt as though she were walking through a weightless vacuum. Not floating exactly, but cut loose from everything. One touch and she could tumble out of control. The Major chuckled once the door was shut behind them.
You should see your faces,
he said.
Well, I can't really see yours, Hetchkey, but I can imagine.
Are we really going to attack the planet, sir?
You bet you are. Are you up to it?
I'll do my best, sir.
That's all we can ask of you. What we expect is a different story.
In no time at all, they reached the Commoner's expansive technical storeroom. Lorin gazed hungrily at row after row of clean armor shells, up-to-date weapons, and apparently endless cases of ammunition. She knew this wasn't a big ship, so the stores weren't as extensive as she imagined, but it was so much more than she had seen in a long time. She almost wept.
Here we are. Sergeant, these two new lieutenants find themselves sorely under-provisioned. Make sure they're equipped with everything they need. And do it on the double.
Yes, Major Cha.
The swarthy sergeant took charge of Lorin and led her into paradise.
What about the Mandalorian?
Axe asked when the stunned troopers were gone.
What role does he play in all this?
She hadn't forgotten her vow.
I will kill you, Douse Driver, or die trying.
Apart from supplying any other intel he might have,
said the captain,
I expect him to join the fighters sweeping hexes from orbit.
It might be difficult keeping him out of play, said one of her officers. Mandalorians love nothing better than a good fight.
He's done a very good job of staying out of this one, said the Padawan with a shrug. Maybe he'll be content with that.
Axe kept her feelings to herself. She would be hundreds of kilometers away from them then, intent on destroying the droid's coordinating intelligence. But she would advise her master to keep an eye on Striver's scout, in the hope that it strayed too close to an Imperial ship. In the chaos of combat, missiles often went astray. She wanted him dead, even if she couldn't deliver the killing blow herself.
One of our signals officers believe the hexes identify us by our transponders, said another alien on the captain's staff. We could feather our drives, confuse them.
Better yet, said the Padawan, we could avoid drives entirely.
What do you mean?
Shuttle to low orbit, free fall straight down from there, then shoot onto the targets.
Axe was impressed. She liked that plan, despite herself.
It could work. We'll show up on radar, of course, but they won't know what we are. Toss out a bit of junk with us, and they might even mistake us for debris.
The captain was nodding.
Excellent. The only thing left to decide is who has overall authority.
There was another awkward silence. Axe had known this moment was coming.
Darth Kratis or Colonel Kalish. We have the bulk cruiser.
But we have more ships,
said Captain Pippoliti.
Master Shan should make the call, said the Padawan with perfect predictability. Her foresight is legendary.
Does she know how this is going to end?
Axe asked him.
I do not, the Grandmaster said. But I do know that we'll never agree on this point. I suggest we give someone else the authority to oversee this engagement. Not the details, but the key strategic moments. Someone we have already trusted to act as a go-between in difficult circumstances.
All eyes turned to Envoy V.E.
I would be honored, of course, he said. But
Darth Kratis will accept this proposal, said Axe,
enjoying the way the traitor squirmed.
So will I, said the captain.
On one condition,
Axe added.
We must be sure that Envoy V.E. is acting independently, not under any kind of distress or influence, as we cannot guarantee that he will do so here, in a Republic vessel. We require that he be stationed elsewhere, and remain in constant contact with all parties.
Not with you,
said the captain.
Or douse driver.
Nebula's ship, said Shigar.
The Grand Master nodded. The Auriga Fire. Envoy V.E.'s larynx bobbed once, twice. Then he visibly got himself together.
I will accept this responsibility, he said. On the assumption that my instructions will be followed to the letter. There's no point having me in this role if you won't listen to me. All of you.
He was looking at the captain, who nodded. Clearly a civilian authority was better than either a Sith or a Jedi.
I will play my part, she said.
Darth Kratos will too,
Axe said.
I'm sure Envoy V.E. will do the right thing. By all of us.
He glanced at her, and she saw the terror in his eyes. He understood very well indeed what she had meant. While the Sith apprentice relayed the orders to her master, Ula took a moment to review the plan in his mind. Primary and secondary objectives were now defined. There would be three teams. The first would clear Sabaddon's orbit so that landing parties could get through. The second, led by Grandmaster Shan, would attempt to destroy the droid's coordinating intelligence, their version of him, he now realized. No doubt the Hexes would be seeking to take him out in return. The third team would be led by Major Cha, with Lorin and Hetchke backing him up. They would drop into the Master Factory and prevent the droids from creating a new CI. Ula's job was to oversee it all, and somehow stay alive. The Jedi Padawan came in close.
I don't know what you told them, Shigar whispered, but you've got the Imperials jumping exactly in time.
Ula looked up from the holographic globe.
It was nothing special, he said,
hiding many layers of truth behind a simple lie.
They're not monsters. They can be made to see reason.
Shigar's doubt on that point was impervious.
However you did it, keep it up and you'll be Supreme Chancellor one day.
Not if I'm caught.
Ula was well aware of how agents were punished by both sides. But part of him was flattered by the Padawan's confidence in him. He remembered how Shigar had saved him from the collapsing wall on Hutta, and how Lorin had volunteered to accompany him to what must have seemed like certain doom when meeting with Darth Kratos. These acts had been offered freely, without promise of reward. He didn't understand where they came from, unless they genuinely thought him worth saving. Him, he wondered, or his false face. Either way, he felt somewhat buoyed by their regard.
The Mandalorian agrees,
said the R'Laren Major, looking up from a separate holoprojector.
Intel and surveillance, engaging only as instructed.
Darth Kratos concurs on all points but one,
added the Sith apprentice on returning to the huddle.
He will fight with Master Shan during the assault on the CI, and I will fight too.
The Grand Master nodded slowly.
Very well. My Padawan will be part of the strike force, so that is only fair.
Excellent,
said Ula, playing the part of the mediator with something like aplomb, he hoped.
We are agreed. All that remains is to begin.
No time like the present, I say,
Captain Pippoliti rumbled.
My sentiments exactly, said Ula.
I will retire to the Auriga Fire and set up my command post there. On notification that all is in place elsewhere, I will give the order. Nothing is to commence until then. Understood?
They understood well enough, and he was under no illusions either. It was all an act, a hasty bandaging of cracks that would inevitably tear the Alliance asunder. But while they were prepared to play, so was he. Captain Pippoliti clicked her fingers, and an escort fell in behind him. They marched him through the ship to where the Auriga Fire remained safely docked, then left him there. The smuggler looked up when he entered the cockpit.
How'd it go?
Could have been worse, Ula said,
falling into the co-pilot seat.
They put me in charge.
Well, good for you. That's the seat to be in if you want to skim a little profit.
I'm not interested in doing that.
So what are you interested in?
That was the question, Ula supposed. Was it to give the Sith what they wanted, and thereby perpetuate their deadly regime? Was it to provide resources for the Minister of Logistics in order to further his dream of a more balanced Imperial society? Or was it something else? He'd always thought of Coruscant as cursed. Only now did he realize just how easy he'd had it there. Out here, the issues were the same, but the blasters aimed at his temple were much, much closer. Chapter 32. Lorin looked out a transperisteel portal and wondered if she was dreaming. The commoner was stationed in close orbit around Sabaton's lumpy moon, in lockstep with the other Republic ships. The Imperial vessels had occupied a different orbit, but they were steadily falling into line. Once the fleets merged, the first attack run would begin. She would be heading down to the surface with the other soldiers to fight the enemy where it lived. Until then, there was nothing to do but stare at the view. As Lorin watched, an almost surreal conjunction occurred before her eyes. The moon, Sabaton, and the dramatic spiral of the galaxy formed a straight line, with the jets of the black hole aligned at right angles, creating a stellar X. It reminded her of the Cross of Glory, the highest military award given by the Republic. She didn't believe in omens or any kind of future-telling at all, really, despite talk of Master Satil's abilities in that regard. But she decided to take it as a good sign. Everything was lined up. Everything was perfect. When the conjunction broke apart, she turned away from the viewport and tested her new armor. The suit was clean, fully charged, and equipped with everything she had ever wanted. All the pockets were full, all the seals checked. Her joints moved smoothly, without impediment, and provided assist when requested without jarring or losing control. Her helmet was a little snug, but the quartermaster had assured her they all were these days. The newer designs were better equipped to prevent head trauma in even the most extreme situations. She would take a little claustrophobia in return for knowing her skull was safe. In the mirror, she was unrecognizable, and that wasn't just because of the lieutenant insignia on her shoulders.
"You have fingers,"
said a voice from the entrance to the ready room. She turned, saw Shigar standing there, freshly kitted out in the Jedi version of uniform and armor. Browns and blacks mainly, with loose folds of cloth hiding compact armor plating.
"That is Lorin, isn't it?"
he added with a sudden frown.
"Yes,"
she said, snapping out of her daze. She tugged the helmet off with her left hand, which, as Shigar pointed out, now had individual digits. The new prosthetic wasn't permanent. It was just a step up from the crude paddle Ula had found on the Auriga Fire. But it could hold the stock of a rifle while her right hand pulled the trigger. It could type digits into a keypad. It could point.
"It'll do,"
she said, feigning nonchalance. He came deeper into the room, so they were standing an arm's length apart.
"We're breaking orbit in 10 minutes. I wanted to say good luck."
Her stomach roiled. She had plans to go over, equipment to check, troops to address, and the jump itself waiting at the end of all that. She hadn't dived from orbit since basic training. Only crazy people did it by choice. So many things could go wrong. She was acutely aware that this could be the last time they ever saw each other.
"Who needs luck?" she said. "You've got the Force on your side. And I have lots of blasters."
He smiled.
"Does nothing faze you?"
"Not officially. Just plasma spiders. Oh, and the smell of rice and crackers for some reason."
His smile broadened.
"Good for you. Frankly, I'm terrified."
Her stomach rolled as though it were in free fall.
"Actually," she said, "this kind of thing makes me a little nervous."
She leaned closer to him, moving quickly so she wouldn't change her mind, and kissed him on the lips. He pulled away with a shocked look on his face.
"Lorin, oh, I'm sorry. I don't... No,"
she said, face burning. "I don't think of you that way," he'd clearly been about to say. They were words she didn't want to hear.
"Don't apologize. I'm sorry. It was my mistake. I thought..."
She stopped. They were talking on top of each other, and his face was as red as hers. She was suddenly afraid to move, to do or say anything lest it be utterly misconstrued. Where had the natural banter between them gone? What had happened to the connection she'd been sure was there? If she was sure of one thing now, it was that prolonging the awkwardness guaranteed nothing but more of the same.
"I guess this is goodbye," she said. "For now. Good luck to you too, Shigar."
"Thank you," he said.
And although she couldn't look at him, she knew he was looking hard at her.
"Thank you, Lirin, of Clan Moxla."
Then he was gone, leaving nothing but his smell behind. She pressed her face into her hands.
"Flack, flack, flack, flack!"
"What's wrong?"
asked an entirely new voice from the doorway. It was Hetchki. She blinked up at him and tried to focus on something other than what an idiot she felt like.
"Nothing. Just getting myself in the mood."
"Our platoons are assembled. What am I going to tell them?"
He was as scared as she was.
"Nothing but the truth,"
she told him.
"That you'll kick them in the cargo hold if they make us look bad."
She scooped up her helmet and followed him to the briefing rooms. Hetchke's was first in line. With a deep breath of his unique atmospheric mix, he plunged inside. Lorenz was third along, and she had barely enough time to compose herself before getting there. She was a lieutenant in charge of a vital mission, she reminded herself. She had survived two encounters with the droids of Sabaddon before this, and now she had also survived the most embarrassing romantic encounter of her life. She was Special Forces trained. What could a bunch of low-life grunts possibly do to throw her?
"Well, well," said a voice from the troops assembled in the room. "If it isn't Toxic Moxla, the snitch from Khifu."
There, in the front row, was the Zabrak who had challenged her on Coruscant.
"Perfect," she thought. "Just fragging perfect."
Axe looked up as the Padawan entered the staging area. There wasn't literally a cloud over his head, but there might as well have been. His face was shadowed, overcast, on the brink of some kind of internal storm. She moved out of the corner she'd found for herself, far away from the Republic throng waiting for the shuttle to launch, and crossed to him.
"You're angry,"
she said.
"Only at myself."
He tried to shrug her off, but she wasn't letting him go so easily.
"That's the first time I've seen you this way. It's an improvement."
He gave her a scathing look.
"What are you talking about?" "Anger is a good thing," she said. "It frees you, makes you stronger."
"That's a lie. Anger is a path to the dark side."
"You say that as though it's a bad thing."
She drew him closer to her.
"You know, you fight pretty well. Imagine how much more powerful you could be if you could shrug off the repressive ways of your masters and..."
"Don't."
He wrenched his arm free.
"Your mother was angry too. And look where that got her."
She recoiled.
"What did you plan to do to her when you found her?"
She let the truth of that show on her face.
"Anger and hate bleed everything dry."
He stalked off. Axe didn't smile until she was sure he wasn't looking. His disgust made him beautiful, and that was reward enough for her. Shigar put as much distance as he could between himself and the Sith girl. She was pretty, but her face hid a foul heart. Best, he told himself, to stay well away. His revulsion was inevitably entangled with feelings of regret for Lirin. How could he have handled that encounter so badly? He should have been less astonished, gentler. Was this what Master Satil had meant about being kind? His master came up to him and put a hand on his shoulder. He felt instantly calmer, as though she had sucked the tension out of him.
"We'll be descending in the same shuttles," she said. "Imperials and us alike. You will meet far worse."
"I know, Master. She just took me by surprise."
"That is ever their aim. When I was a Padawan..."
A clang of metal on metal cut her off. The external airlock hissed open. A squadron of Imperial soldiers marched in, matching the Republic contingent one for one. This was clearly the squad that would be joining them on the drop onto the island containing the Hex's coordinating intelligence. They were human, hard-faced, and heavily armed. Their discipline was impeccable. Not a cheek twitched out of place, not a lip curled. Behind them came a dark presence that turned Shigar's blood to water, a tortured amalgam of flesh and metal. He stood a head taller than anyone else and radiated a deep, bone-piercing chill. He had once been a man, but the dark side had twisted every last drop of humanity from him, leaving a husk that looked barely alive. Only his eyes contained any genuine vitality. From them radiated boundless reserves of loathing. He breathed in hurried gasps, as though the air smelled foul, or as though each intake might be his last. A long, thin staff tapped in time with the heavy tread of his boots.
"I am here," Darth Kratos announced. "This operation can now commence."
"Envoy VE is awaiting only our personal assignments," said Satil Shan, standing up to him as though he were any ordinary being. "When we give them to him, he will issue the order."
"Refer to him as envoy no longer."
The Sith Lord looked down his twisted nose at her.
"I will obey no servant of the Republic."
"Director VE, then, of Independent Operation Sabaddon."
She folded her hands patiently behind her back.
"I will take my Padawan on the first of two assaults from the..."
"No. You will take my apprentice, and I will take yours. That is the only way to ensure impartiality."
The words hung like icicles. Shigar wanted to beg his master to deny Darth Kratos this condition.
"Don't give in to him,"
he yearned to say.
"Don't send me anywhere with that creature. He'll kill me as soon as your back is turned."
Master Satil only smiled.
"Of course, Darth Kratos. I'm happy to accommodate your wish. Do you wish to divide the rest of our personnel any particular way?"
"They do not concern me."
He waved a hand in easy dismissal.
"Very well. I will assign them randomly. Is that all?"
His gaze narrowed. Her question made him sound like he was being pedantic, and he clearly didn't like that.
"The arrangements are sufficient."
Master Satil typed rapidly into a datapad. Imperial and Republic comms had been hastily married into one contiguous network, allowing orders to be transmitted from the Auriga Fire via various command vessels. Almost immediately, a series of chimes and spoken commands divided the two cohorts into two intermixed groups. Half would stay behind and launch from the commoner. The rest would return with Darth Kratos to the Imperial shuttle. Shigar was in the latter group, and he watched with his heart in his mouth as the troopers he would soon be leaving behind fell into their new arrangement, spaced neatly, if awkwardly, across the staging area. In a very short time, he would be cast adrift in the world of the Imperials, in the clawed fist of Darth Kratos. Master Satil came up beside him. Once again, she correctly divined the source of his disquiet, but this time there was no calming hand.
"I agreed to Darth Kratos's request," she said, "because I cannot afford to trust him. I'm relying on you to make sure he sticks to the arrangement."
"I'm no match for a Sith Lord,"
Shigar said aghast.
"Oh, he won't kill you," she said. "I'm sure he has something worse in mind."
He understood then. She was testing him, and if he failed, they might never meet as Jedi again.
"I won't let you down, Master."
"The Force will be with you."
They embraced and went their separate ways. Chapter 33. "Shuttles away," said Jet. Ula fell back into the co-pilot's seat, watching the telemetry confirming Jet's simple statement. The combined Imperial Republic fleet had obeyed his order to deploy. Their mad plan might actually work. In the next hour,
4,000 people would converge on Sabaton singly, there to recombine as attack